his followers and this message from the plain, that those two intents are not on even ground with one another. And, you know, like, let's look a little closer to that first half of the passage as well, that sense of, you know, are people blessed to be poor? You know, does God desire for us to go hungry? Are we supposed to go through this life grieving and weeping? Does God intend for us to be hated and reviled and excluded? Those things don't sound like blessings. You know, elsewhere, Jesus talks about how he desires for his followers to experience life and life to the full, abundant life. That's not what I feel like I'm hearing in those blessings that Jesus shares this morning. If we lean into the tension of this text, of what it's saying to us and what Jesus is saying to his followers in this sermon from Luke, I think that some context might help to shine a little bit of insight into what he's talking about. Now, it's worth knowing that I think part of what Jesus is doing here in this message to his followers and to the crowd around them is challenging this toxic religious belief that had taken root in the community during Jesus' time. And that for all that the Jewish scriptures speak about God's care and compassion for the widow and the orphan, for the foreigner and the vulnerable, and for all oppressed members of the community, during Jesus' time, it was common for folks to believe that if someone was afflicted with some kind of hardship, whether they were poor or ill or struck by some kind of sudden tragedy, that these forms of suffering were the hand of God punishing them for their sinfulness. Now, we can almost imagine someone with that type of thinking having this idea of, like, sure, you know, God desires for us as religious people to care for the poor. But if you want to talk about why they're poor, well, that's their own damn fault. If they would just live as they're supposed to, if they would be good and faithful people, righteous before God, well, then they would receive blessing in their lives. And even though folks could see the lie when they looked to examples in their midst, like Herod or Caesar, these wealthy and powerful individuals who are clearly not living as the scriptures told them that God desired for them to live, there persisted this general notion that if you were a good person, if you were faithful, if you were a righteous person, that riches, good food, happiness, social standing, that God would shine his favor and his blessings down on you for the way that you live. And that, consequently, if you didn't have those things, if you were not doing so well, that was because of the sins of you or your family. So part of what I think Jesus is getting at in this morning's passage from Luke is pushing back on this belief, reversing people's expectations. Blessed are you who are poor, who are hungry, who weep, who are excluded or who are reviled. God sees you. God's promise of blessing and favor is for you. And I think this might give us a bit of an insight to why we hear in the Gospels that religious leaders were always so frustrated with Jesus for declaring the forgiveness of people's sins. You know, again, the sense of, hey, Jesus, if you want to come to town and heal people, do some miracles and some preaching, that's all well and good. But forgiving people's sins? That's something only God does. And only after people have made all the prerequisite sacrifices and repented and dotted the line and gone through the proper forms and procedures. You can't just be going and looking this all willy-nilly on us. When Jesus removes the world's justification for ostracizing people who have been deemed unworthy, it no longer fits neatly into folks' religious expectations. Hear that the person begging in the street for help to alleviate their hunger or their poverty is free of sin, blessed and favored by God. And just as Jesus' context is important for trying to discern what he's saying in our gospel passage, I think it's important for us to look at our own context as well as we seek to hear ourselves within the text. The statistics from World Hunger and Global Hunger Relief and the World Health Organization tell us that we live in a world where over 700 million people are living below the international poverty line of less than $2 a day. That about 800 million people suffer worldwide from chronic undernourishment. And that it's estimated that nearly half of the deaths in children under 5 are caused by poor nutrition. And if we even look a little more close to home, the Hunger Task Force states that in the city of Milwaukee, it's about 28% of people, and an overwhelming 41% of children live below the federal poverty line. And in the face of this economic hardship that is present in our midst, I saw some articles this week talking about how Amazon reported $11.2 billion in profits in 2018. And it was catching news because apparently they were not paying anything in federal income taxes. This is the world that we live in. This is the culture that we are immersed in and a part of. And yet, as Christians, as followers of Christ, we have Jesus' words this morning saying that blessed are those who are poor, who are hungry, who weep, and woe to those who are rich, who are full, who are laughing, and well spoken. This is a hard text to preach on. A hard text to hear. But if our lives, if our nation, if our desires more closely reflect that second truth, where is the good news for us in this morning's gospel? For we believe that the gospel of Jesus Christ is good news for all people. Amen. If I grapple with this passage for this week, for what to say about the gospel, I was reminded of Dr. Billman back at seminary, who I remember told us once in class, you know, the best word that you can share with someone if they're driving a car and they don't realize that that car is headed for the edge of the cliff is stop! Sometimes that's the best word that someone can hear. And it may be that in this morning's text from Luke that we hear Jesus trying to shock and grab the attention of his followers who are experiencing now in their lives God's abundance on earth. Not so that Jesus can shame them so they would internalize this fear about ever admitting to the goodness of life, worried that the shoe of woe would drop on them at any moment. But rather so that they might pause and reflect on whether they are living in ways that reveal a love for their neighbor as they love themselves. But make no mistake, when folks see defending their own power or privilege or profits as greater cause for alarm than caring for people who are vulnerable or hurting, such is not following the ways of Christ. So I think Jesus is trying to jar folks, to remind them that being his follower in this world means to use the power that God has given us to extend goodness and grace, healing and compassion to folks in need around us. Just like we hear at the beginning of the reading, that the multitudes had come to hear him, to be healed of their diseases, and those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. All in the crowd were trying to touch him, but power came out from him and healed all of them. Jesus, role modeling for his followers, this way of loving and caring for those in his midst, does these things and then turns to them and says to his followers, those who are poor or hungry, grieving or excluded, and proclaims that God's grace and abundance is for them as well. That God desires for them to experience God's blessing. And Jesus also turns to his followers, those who are rich and well-fed and happy and for whom folks spoke well of. And Jesus told them, don't let all those good things blind you to the needs of people around you who don't have it so well. And as Christians, I think we desperately need to hear both of these messages. Because we do not exist in a binary world where we're all one thing or all the other. We all grapple with ways that we may disrupt God's will for our lives or for our communities, just as surely as we all need the saving work of Christ and the grace that flows freely from the God who loves us. Regardless of where we hear ourselves in this morning's gospel passage, regardless of which aspects of blessing and woe resonate with our lived experience, there is grace for each of us. Grace for all of the ways that we experience guilt or shame, and a promise of hope for all the ways that we experience hardship and suffering. Because at the core of the gospel message is the reminder of God's love for all people, that even while we were steeped in sin, Jesus came and died on a cross so that the empty tomb might reveal God's promise of new life for us in the midst of whatever we endure in this world. And having received this good news of the newness of life found through Christ's love and actions on our behalf, we are called to be Christ in our own world in this time, to be the hands of God embracing people in the midst of their need, extending signs of love and blessing so all would know God's favor.